Later, up on the chaff in the barn again. None of us is admitting that we expect the cottons to call very soon, but we are all hoping it like mad, for that is who the two men were, of course, the cottons of Scotney, on their way there for the first time. I can't think why I didn't guess it at once, for I did know that the estate had passed to an American. Old Mr. Cotton's youngest son went back to the States in the early 1900s, after some big family row, I believe, and later became an American citizen. He died about a year ago. These two young men are his sons. Simon, he is the one with the beard, said last night that he had just persuaded his grandfather to receive him when poor, lonely old Mr. Cotton died, which seems very sad indeed. The younger son's name is Neil, and the reason he sounds so different from his brother is that he was brought up in California, where his father had a ranch, while Simon lived in Boston and New York with his mother. I gather the parents were divorced. Mrs. Cotton is in London now and is coming to Scotney soon. Certainly he has a fascinating voice, though I think I like the younger brother best. It is a pity that Simon is the heir, because Rose thinks the beard is disgusting. But perhaps we can get it off. Am I really admitting that my sister is determined to marry a man she has only seen once and doesn't much like the look of? It is half real and half pretense, and I have an idea that it is a game most girls play when they meet any eligible young man. They just wonder. It was a wonderful moment when Rose stood there at the top of the stairs. While I was hurrying into my clothes behind the sheets, the Cottons explained who they were. They have only been in England a few days. Simon said, "I couldn't believe this kitchen was real. It was like looking at woodcut in some old book of fairy tales." I hope he thought Rose looked like a fairy tale princess. She certainly did. And she was so charming, so easy. She kept laughing her pretty laugh. I thought of how different she had been in her black mood not half an hour before, and that made me remember her wishing on the devil angel. There was one dramatic moment when Simon asked me if we owned the castle, and I answered, "No, you do." I hastily added that we had nearly 30 years of our lease to run. I wonder if leases count if you don't pay the rent. I did not, of course, mention the rent. I felt it might be dampening. After we had all been talking for 20 minutes or so, Topaz came down wearing her old tweed coat and skirt. We introduced the Cottons, and she talked a little, but seemed very subdued. What was the matter with her last night? After a few minutes, she began to make cocoa. There was no other drink to offer except water. I felt that Father ought to be in on any form of nourishment that was loose in the house, but I knew it was useless to ask him to come and meet strangers. Suddenly, the back door burst open, and in he came. It had started to rain heavily again, and it is quicker to rush across the courtyard than go carefully along the top of the walls. He had his rug over his head. He didn't see the Cottons until he was right in the midst of things. Topaz stopped mixing cocoa and said very distinctly and proudly, "This is my husband, James Mortmain."